Hey, welcome to Night School. And the topic today is one that I'm always a little hesitant to talk about, always a little bit self-conscious, but not too self-conscious, not self-conscious to the point of being self-censoring, because I do think about this stuff and I think it's important for me to talk about it, even just for my own sake. And it involves the whole digital world we live in, because I feel like the digital world is truly a world that we are living in, maybe a sub-world, but it is one world that makes up the larger world. I feel like there are these sub-worlds, and the digital world is absolutely a valid other world that we enter, and as much as we think we control it, as much as we think it's a reflection of us, who we are in the flesh, we have reached a point where I would say the digital world controls us as much as we control it. So there's really this back and forth, this full circle sort of influence. It's a two-way street, I guess would be a way to put it. And if you watch TV at all, you'll see that all commercials these days make references to social media. They'll make little jokes or quips, or they'll try to draw you in by somehow making references to some digital thing. And TV is going, you know, TV is going to be extinct in the next 20 years, I would guess, or it's going to be so different than what we think of as TV today that it's really not going to be the TV of the last 50 years. But thinking about this digital world and how overconnected we are in it. Definitely connected, but I would say overconnected, and we might continue to get even more connected through this. I don't think so. I think there already is a lot of pushback. I think people are already starting to resent each other and see the limitations and the negative, just the negative splash that's come from all of this. But I also think we're going to continue to go in this direction too. I hope we can find a smarter way to do it, because we've just been winging it. You know, it's like none of this was planned. You think about social media, which is a phrase I hate, but it's become the term, the phrase for all of this. And I can't think of anything better to use. If I could think of a better phrase to use, if I could waste my time to come up with a better phrase for it, I would. But it's like so many words that have just become a core part of our language. I think probably most words came about this way. Somebody came up with a word for something way back when, caveman days. Somebody came up with a word and somebody was like, you're calling that a stick? Stick is such a dumb fucking word for, you know, that piece of wood that fell off a tree. Why are you calling it a stick? But they couldn't think of anything better. And even if they could, they couldn't think of a word that would stick better than the word stick. Apologies for the bad joke. I tried to come up with an alternative, but it just wouldn't stick. So I think a lot of words come about that way. So for lack of a better phrase, truly lack of a better phrase, social media, I think, is always the best example to use when we're talking about that overconnectedness. And if we get any more overconnected, I just don't even know what it's going to look like. I can't even comprehend it now. We're going to be laying on top of each other practically. With that overconnectedness, I think what we've seen happen, and it's not limited to social media. Social media seems to get the most flack because I think it brings out the most obvious tension and resentment in us. It's the most obvious way that we are overconnected. But I think it's all of these things. It's all of these digital platforms. It's the way that news is spread to us. It's text messaging. It's everything we do that is done quickly and closely and seemingly intimately, but with the true magic of intimacy removed, if that makes any sense. It's like you can contact someone privately and directly, but there's the intimacy of actually hearing their voice or seeing their face removed. And I don't mind that. I don't really mind that. I think there's something good about being able to do that, just like there's something bad. But the way I see all of this stuff, and especially social media, is we've almost created this digital apartment complex, this techno-psychological apartment complex. And when you pop onto something like social media, it's almost like you're getting a glimpse through someone's apartment window. And initially, when these things were new, I mean, in the early days, because that's the thing, too, is a lot of people hopped on this stuff in the late 2000s. You know, I would say around 2007 through 2009 is when this stuff really started to ramp up on a mainstream level, when multiple generations were starting to use it. Because there were earlier forms of it. There were always earlier forms. I grew up using message boards. I grew up, you know, using the earlier forms of social media, which, you know, is sort of a revisionist way of describing them, because it really wasn't thought of the same way. They were just sort of these standalone sites where you may or may not be connected to people you know. I'm thinking of things like online journals. There was LiveJournal. There were all sorts of online journals. There were blogs. Just old school blogs, web blogs. There was then MySpace, things like that came about, which were, you know, there's a much clearer lineage between that and something like Facebook, obviously. So I saw that kind of develop, but at that point in time, it tended to be you were connected to people that you really just deliberately had a reason to be connected to. Your current group of friends, assuming they even wanted to use that shit, you know, the nerdier of your friends or the friends of yours who actually, you know, wanted to use computers. Because back then, you didn't really have to use the internet. You didn't have to use computers as much. So the sort of person that wanted to use these websites to express themselves in some way, to use this new medium, this internet, as any kind of self-expression, whether they were using it just to express themselves, you know, their art or things that they made in the flesh, things that they say they were an artist or a musician, they might use it for that. Or they might just use it for the sake of, you know, rambling about their life, a true dear diary sort of thing. But either way, people had to kind of very deliberately choose who they were connected with. They might have been online friends that you had. They might have been real life friends, but it was a much smaller network of people. And then I think that when I talk about the 2007 through 2009, when things really started to ramp up, that was when you started to see a lot more of everybody. Everybody from your life started to be connected to you if you used that stuff. Coworkers, family members, all of that. And I think initially there was sort of an appeal to it. It was almost like, oh, this guy's there? You know, this friend of mine, my good friend's on this. And then it was like, oh, you know, this person I know through some weird art thing or music, they're on here? Oh, great. Oh, that family member that I really like, they're on here. Oh, the girl I like is on here? Oh, you know, and everyone was sort of excited. It was this new field. You know, we weren't really used to it, so it was like any sort of expression on there was somehow like worthy of your attention. And a lot of the people who were driving this thing, a lot of the momentum was coming from young people, people who weren't resigned to their fate, who their path was still developing. Even if it didn't develop any further, they were still under the illusion that their path was developing. So they at least seemed interesting, even if they weren't. But you had these people on there, and you were kind of like, oh, you know, like I get to be connected to this, to all these people. And then from there, especially on platforms like Facebook, you started to have like, oh, everybody I went to elementary school with, everybody I work with, every family member. And it started to all just kind of fold on top of itself. And, you know, at that point, I didn't really use it very much. And I don't think there was any point where I really like used it excessively, but there definitely reached a point where I went from like checking it like once a week to checking it every day and then multiple times a day, which is a lot, but maybe not as much as other people somehow. But I think what contributed to really its downfall, and even though this stuff is still in use, what has contributed to its downfall is just that overexposure to each other. And it really is like everybody decided to live in this psychic apartment complex, cheap, like Section 8 apartment complex. If you've ever lived in one of those just sprawling apartment complexes, it's cheap. You know, it's plain. There's nothing particularly attractive about it. You don't want to use the hot tub they offer over in the cabana because you just see the other types of people who live there, and you wouldn't dare get in that hot tub knowing that they also use it. So you know, if you've ever lived in one of those places, you know exactly what I'm talking about. And there's this sort of resentment that builds when you live in one of those apartment complexes. You know, you don't often make friends. You might smile at a neighbor or two, especially the people that live closest to you, but you hear too much of them, and the glimpse that you see into their lives is often a little bit depressing, or you hear them fighting. You know, just there's all this leakage that goes on. Everything feels like leakage. And you might run into people in the parking lot and give them a nod. But it's like overall, it's like you live there and it's like you want to leave. You have other ideas about how you want to live in the future. But right now you're stuck in this cheap apartment complex. And you can see like glimpses into other people's windows. And some people have fancy curtains. There's that lady across the way who has a parrot and she brings it out onto her little back deck and you hear it in the summer. And so it's like some people fancy it up, and there are those like little old ladies who have kind of made it, you know, they're retired, maybe their husband's dead if they ever had one, and they've sort of like made a certain peace there, and they seem to be the only people in this apartment complex who are even remotely content. But even then, there's just something a little bit depressing if you pay too much attention. You know, and they might have fancy curtains, but still the building is just so drab. There are very few ways to really dress it up. And I feel like after the initial excitement with social media of being like, oh, he moved in there? She lives there? You know, all this stuff where it's like this kind of excitement. Oh, it's this new building they built. And then it's aged very poorly. It's like a place where they initially built it in 1999, and there was something kind of sleek and minimal about it. And you were like, oh, you know, this is a new apartment complex, but it was cheaply built. And as it's aged, it's just that sort of sleek minimalism has just aged to this like worse than Soviet block housing. And it's just drab. And, you know, the grounds are, you know, well maintained, but just dull. And there's very little life. It feels like very little life. And what little life you're exposed to is like the lady whose like boyfriend just got out of jail, you know, screaming at him, and I don't know. It's just kind of gotten pulled into the swamp. And I think social media is very much the same way, where initially it was this kind of new apartment complex, and it was cheap, you know, it was free. And a lot of people you knew lived there, but as it's aged, it's just become this way to like kind of see this depressing window into other people's lives. And there's, you know, you've grown to resent those people because when they do express themselves, when you do hear their voice, you know, it's just sort of ugly. It's just kind of this, oh, I can hear them fighting. I can hear them. I can hear what TV show they watch every night. Oh, and their footsteps above me. It's like, how dare they walk across the floor? How dare they walk across this aging, this aging apartment complex floor and make a noise they have no control over? And that's what it's sort of like when you see certain people's posts. You're like, oh, you know, how dare they have the audacity to make some extremely boring post that I am forcing myself to look at? You know, how dare they? But you do sort of develop that just base resentment because you're all in this same boat together. And as much as you fantasize about moving out and living in a McMansion or just a rustic dream house, you know, at the edge of the woods, no matter how much you dream about that, you're still stuck there for the time being. And you're waiting for something new to come along. And every once in a while, something new does come along. But it's another boring apartment complex with the same exact amenities. And I know that if I move into that other apartment complex, the same exact process is going to unfold. Except there will be even less excitement because I'm already familiar with what happened here. And I'm not going to trick myself into getting too excited. So that's sort of the boat we're in, I feel like, with all this stuff. And there are people who I think we otherwise would have nothing but great opinions of if we only interacted with them not just in the flesh, because I'm not a person who thinks, I'm not one of these people who says, like, we should only call people on the phone, although I do miss talking on the phone more, and I wish that my generation and younger generations weren't so damn afraid of it, because I do genuinely like talking on the phone. But I'm not one of these people who thinks that's the only meaningful way to communicate. I think that there are many meaningful ways to communicate online and digitally, but I think the way that we've kind of crammed that all into this one little box, into these little apartments, has done us a disservice, that over-connectedness. Because we have this sort of lazy view of each other. It's almost like we're sitting on our couch, leaning back, looking out our apartment window into someone else's apartment window, and they're looking back at us. The old lady is spying out of her drapes and, you know, this and that. And then even the people who you don't see, there are the people who just kind of come and go from the apartment complex. You might see them come and go in the parking lot once in a blue moon, but their apartment is usually dark and you can never really tell if they're home or not. Those people are around too, but ultimately they are still in the apartment complex. And what's strange about social media is you have celebrities on it. And that's something that's very new. I think that's one of the most revolutionary aspects of social media, is that celebrities have the same damn account you do. Even if it's one of those like verified celebrity accounts like you see on Twitter or Instagram, celebrities are still using the same program you're using in the same way that you're using it. And what's interesting about that is it's really shown how people view celebrities differently than they do their friends and family. Because celebrities get like millions of followers, even if they just post the most boring stuff imaginable, they get, you know, these millions of followers and tons of responses and feedback. You know, people are very well aware that these people are celebrities and they engage them like celebrities. So even though these people are using the same programs in pretty much the same ways, you know, self-promotion, you know, of course they're doing self-promotion if they're celebrities, but so are your friends and family. They're promoting shit too. But with celebrities, it's like you truly get to see how differently they are viewed by other people, the way that people engage them, they do elevate them. It's almost like those celebrities, they're in the apartment complex, they're in the same apartment complex as everybody else, this digital apartment complex, but they're in a penthouse, and they ride their own private elevator up there. And people are down below, just, you know, some of them are adoring them. They're just adoring them to a degree that they would never show, a degree of adoration they would never show for their loved ones. But the celebrity up in the penthouse, they're just shouting up there. They're just, you know, I love you. It's so great you're up in that penthouse in the same apartment complex I am. It's so great to have you here. You know, it's like there's people like that. But then, of course, there are the people down below who are like just screaming at them, like, how dare you? Oh, you think you're great. You're up in the penthouse. You think you're up in the penthouse. Well, you were in the same apartment complex as me. But in fact, I think you're a worse person. Because I heard what you said about this, and it was very offensive, and oh, and you're ugly, and you're a lot uglier than you think you are, celebrity. But then that person runs into that celebrity in the parking lot once in a blue moon, and when they do, they're like, oh, how's your penthouse? I'm a big fan of your penthouse. So it's like those people always back down when they meet these gods in the flesh. It's a very common. Can I get a picture? Can I get a picture in front of my car? That's sort of a weird aspect of it, that celebrity aspect. But it also has brought the stars down closer. And I think a lot of these things that have come about, I think the Me Too movement, for example, I don't think that would have come about if it weren't for social media. I think that it changed the path that people take toward attaining celebrity, because you have people who have attained celebrity purely through social media. They've attained celebrity purely through living in an apartment complex. But they've attained celebrity purely just through that process. And so they've avoided the casting couch. There are these ways, you know, you can make video yourself. You don't have to go, you know, find some expensive cameraman and a director and all that. People have gotten famous from YouTube. You look at these kids' magazines. I haven't seen them for a couple of years, but as of like 2 years ago, if you went into Walmart and looked at the magazine section, all those like Tiger Beat and Kids Bop magazines, they're focused on YouTube celebrities. And, you know, that those people completely avoided the casting couch, or, you know, and that's the worst aspect of it. The casting couch is like the worst manifestation of that process, but they avoided the whole system. They didn't have to go into auditions. They didn't have to do anything. They truly seized the means of production once it became available. And in that way, they brought the stars down a little closer. The people got up a little bit higher and became closer to the stars, and even some of them became stars. And then the stars themselves came down a little closer. You can say whatever you want to whatever celebrity you want at any given time, and chances are they'll read it. That's the crazy thing. Is if you listen to podcasts with celebrity interviews, you'll find so many of them these days talking about how they've had to, like, I've had to stop reading my comments, but it's hard. I still can't stop doing it. You know, they'll actually say that. So they are reading this. You know, you think about the days of just fan mail, and I don't know whether people actually read that stuff or not when someone mailed letters in, but, you know, fan mail wasn't just arriving instantly on their phone in their pocket. So it's a much different system. So you had that. It really has brought celebrities down closer, and I think it's made it easier to attack them, obviously, because that's practically an industry now. It really is, when you think about all the websites that write exposés attacking celebrities for tweets they made 10 years ago, just digging into people's past and just trying to ruin people, whether it's deserved or not, whether someone deserves criticism or not, it really has become an industry. And that's unfortunate. That's kind of the crazy thing about it. There's all this good that's come from it, of people having the means to produce video and content and become not just celebrities, but just become anything, to do what they want, even if nobody looks at it. I mean, to do a fucking radio show, to do a podcast, you can just do that regardless of how many people listen to it. The equipment is cheaper than it ever has been. You don't even need much equipment. So as much as that's been just a great aspect of all this change of this digital world, the downside is just that people can tear each other down that much easier and do so for little reason. You know, you think about Roseanne, you think about people like that, you know, regardless of what her comments actually were. I mean, I just can't get over it. I was watching Jeopardy the other night, and then afterwards the new Roseanne show came on that's had Roseanne written out. And I was like, this is so fucking surreal. People want to talk about how it's surreal to have Donald Trump as a president. Well, I think it's even more fucking surreal to be watching Roseanne, where Roseanne has been written off the show for something she posted online, but the show still has the Roseanne music. And it's like Roseanne is this like empty space on the show, even though they talk about her. She's apparently dead. They apparently made her die on this show, which is fucking crazy. Just think about how crazy our fucking world is, that Roseanne said something online when she was fucked up, and she's mentally ill. She'll be the first to admit that. But Roseanne said something messed up online, regardless of whether it was intended to be derogatory or not. She said something online, and they killed her on the show Roseanne that was recently rebooted, and now they just talk about her like she's dead because they killed her on the show. And everybody else is still, DJ's still there, all these characters are still there. So that is the best example I think I can think of. That Roseanne show is the best example I can think of the snake swallowing its own tail, of nostalgia being vomited out, eaten again, regurgitated. You know, it's like that is just the vomit of culture, of pop culture in particular, just being swallowed, spit out, swallowed back. And what comes out, the end result of pop cultural vomit just being eaten, spit out over and over again, is eventually you end up with like a show about Roseanne, where Roseanne has been killed off, and they just go about their business as if the show isn't Roseanne, yet it is Roseanne. That is the most bizarre thing. I never would have imagined that. I can imagine a lot of things. When I look into my crystal ball, I feel like I see a lot of things coming. That is one that I didn't see coming. But that said, it's not surprising that it happened when you think about all the regurgitation that has gone on. But yeah, watching that, I watched a little bit of the episode, and I was just like, this is strange. This is truly a strange 2018 experience among many strange 2018 experiences. And everybody can talk about it. I mean, and Rose, what happened there, too, just to tie this back in, is Roseanne, basically somebody overheard her in her apartment. She was on the patio of her apartment in this digital apartment complex, the same one we all live in. She was up in her penthouse, which might not be the highest one in the complex, but it's still a penthouse. Of course, Roseanne is in a fucking penthouse. And she was out on her deck, you know, talking to somebody, and somebody overheard something bad, and they were like, get her down here. Get her out of that penthouse. You know, that's basically what happened. You know, what happened to her is a direct result of her being in this same apartment complex as all of us. And the funny thing, too, is that people are still trying to get off the grid. You know, that has such a different meaning now. Now if somebody has a flip phone, they can have a cell phone, but it's a flip phone, and they only use the internet to check their email or check it occasionally. They're not on it all the time. They have a flip phone, and they just use the internet to check their email. And that person would call themselves off the grid. And whenever I hear that term now, that tends to be the sort of person they're referring to. Oh, he just uses a flip phone. He just checks his email on his desktop computer. He's off the grid. And it's like you think about 10, 15, especially 20 years ago, that would have been the person who's the most on the grid out of anybody. Using a cell phone and the internet at all in like 1992, you would have been the grid at that point. So it's funny how as things change, they become relative, and being off the grid means using a cell phone, but just one that's a little outdated. But what's funny about that is things have come so far that nobody's truly off the grid, because if you're off the grid now, it basically means you live in a little house, but that little house has been surrounded by the digital apartment complex. You might have your little square of land. Like, are you familiar with the Up House? I don't know. I think that's what it's called. It's in Seattle. It was this little old lady who would not sell her house to this. I think they built a mall or some sort of shopping complex, as if there is a difference between those things. It was either a mall or a shopping complex. That makes me think of in high school. We had this a janitor from Vietnam, and one day there was a fire alarm, and everybody had to go outside, and then the rumor kind of spread around that somebody had lit a poster on fire, and at lunch, the Vietnamese janitor walked by, and one of my friends or I said to him, we were like, what was up with the fire? We heard someone lit a poster on fire, and he paused, and he looked really a little bit confused, and he goes, poster? And I'm not going to do his accent as if I can do a Vietnamese accent. They'll tear me down from my penthouse. If I try to do a Vietnamese accent, they'll tear me down from my penthouse like Roseanne. But he had this confused look on his face, and he was like, a poster? No. It was a piece of paper that hangs on the wall. I mean, he said that in broken English. We just got the biggest kick out of that. It's like, yeah, of course. Of course it was. Of course it wasn't a poster. It was a piece of paper that hangs on the wall. I feel like differentiating between a mall and a shopping complex might as well be the same thing. It wasn't a mall. It was a shopping complex. But anyway, that old lady, she would not sell her little piece of land with her little house in Seattle. And so they ended up buying everything around her, and they built this just massive sprawling shopping complex, this shopping mall complex. This digital shopping mall. No, they built this thing around her, and this little house became this landmark. And I've seen other examples of that too, where someone just won't sell their. It even happened to go back to the Seattle area. When I was growing up in Redmond, Microsoft had bought just a huge amount of property, acreage. Microsoft Acreage. Have you heard of that program? No, but they bought all this land, and there was this old couple who wouldn't sell their land. So there was this little house that was just at the edge of the Microsoft property. It's sort of that same thing. But that's essentially what's happening when someone today decides to be off the grid. They're like, you know, I only use a flip phone, and I only check the internet once a day. And I live in this little house. I refuse to live in the apartment complex. But meanwhile, that little house is completely surrounded by the apartment complex. It is just everywhere around them. And not just three of their four sides. It is on every side of them. They literally can't leave their little square of property without entering the apartment complex. It's not just like, oh, they can't even walk out front. And the thing is, even if they're on their property, if they're standing in their yard, even if they're just in their own window, someone is taking a picture in the apartment complex and they are in the background somewhere. Even if they're talking out loud in their little home, quote unquote, off the grid, somebody is recording something nearby and it'll pick up their voice. Or you can see their house in the background of every selfie taken in the apartment complex. So really, are they really off the grid? I mean, if the grid is everything and you are in a little square, you're in your own little grid, you know, and you're surrounded by the bigger grid and you're basically, I mean, it takes so much deliberation to go, quote unquote, off the grid. It's something that you end up thinking about so much. If you've decided to like just have a flip phone these days, or you've decided to take some grand measure to disconnect from the crazy digital world, the crazy digital subworld, the digital underworld, you know, if you've made such a deliberate decision to disconnect from that, it's probably on your mind so much, you probably have to think about it so much that you're basically on the grid at that point. You're basically on the grid in a different way. And is it really that different when it comes down to it, if it's taking up any amount of psychic space in your mind? And of course, you know, the logical conclusion of going off the grid, you know, the ultimate form of that is Ted Kaczynski, the Unabomber. If you don't know that Ted Kaczynski is the Unabomber, you just got to stop listening to this show and do some more homework. I shouldn't have to clarify that. But Ted Kaczynski is kind of the ultimate example of living off the grid. And, you know, I think there's a part of, like, people, when they live off the grid, they're sort of lashing out. You know, it's not just about finding peace. It's not like they joined a monastery. There is this sort of like spite that goes along with it. And I think some people probably are able to do it and find peace, but there's often this spite attached. And I know when I try to deliberately do things, like if I'm sitting in a waiting room and everybody else is checking their phone or browsing whatever it is they browse, browsing the grid, being the grid and browsing the grid. But if everybody's doing that, sometimes I will deliberately not look at my phone, and it's really just to be oppositionally defiant. And I've kind of grown to not check it like instinctively when I'm in that situation. I just kind of breathe in through my nose and out through my mouth because I know that the phone is going to give me no relief. But when I do that now, it's not out of spite, but it's so hard to get to that point where it's like everybody else is checking their phone and you don't do it and you consciously don't do it out of spite. It's so hard to like, to not do that, not out of spite, if that makes any sense. Cause it's just so easy to do. And you think about Ted Kaczynski, like I was saying, like he's somebody who truly got as far off the grid as you can get. And during a time when the grid was much different now, like I said, today being off the grid is having a cell phone that is slightly outdated. Back in, you know, the 80s or whenever it was that Ted Kaczynski like completely cut all ties and went out to his cabin in Montana, you know, being off the grid meant just not even having electricity. Yet he was still compelled to lash out. And of course, you know, he had a disorder, you know, he had some very antisocial tendencies to say the least, but yet he's a great example of what I'm talking about, where in going off the grid, he became obsessed with the grid to the point where he mailed a bomb to a computer salesman, a guy who sold computers in a store. You know, he's not sending a bomb to Bill Gates, who at least is an icon of technological development, you know. Okay, if you're going to like bomb people who are responsible for major technological innovation, send it to the guy who's responsible for creating Windows and all sorts of other things, you know. Send it to the guy who's an absolute icon of technological development. Don't send it to like some random guy who runs a fucking computer store. You know, but that's what Ted Kaczynski did, because he was so obsessed with the grid that anybody on the grid became a target, including just complete nobodies, you know? And so that's an extreme example, but just in the same way that he's an extreme example of what it meant to live off the grid, he's also an extreme example of the way that the grid will control you even more sometimes, the more that you try to get off of it. So it's sort of this double bind, this catch-22, where it's almost, well, it's just sort of like the classic, like, Buddhist idea, anything like that, Eastern spirituality, where the more you struggle, like, if you're in pain, the more that you struggle, the more you suffer. The more you relax, the less you will suffer, even though you're still in pain. You're not going to stop the pain, but the more that you struggle, the more you will suffer. And suffering is, in theory, something you can control. So I do feel like going off the grid, unless you really know what you're doing, unless you really have yourself, you know, in order, and maybe have some kind of just spiritual purpose behind it. I'm not saying you need that. I'm not saying you have to have some orthodox, you know, religion or spiritual practice. But if you just kind of have yourself, you know, together in some way. And I would consider that a form of spirituality just on a basic level. I think then you can go off the grid and you won't necessarily be consumed by the grid. But it is tricky. There's a double bind there. There's a catch-22. And I imagine that you're basically going to devote your life in some way to constantly working through that struggle. You know, because technologically will continue to invade your life. It'll continue to creep into your life. You know, you might have that little house that's on a little square of land completely surrounded by the digital apartment complex, and you might think that you have everything covered. You know, you might think that you're totally secure, and now it's 2018 and you have drones flying next to your window. You know, there's really no escape. There's no complete escape. And like I said, I mean, you can even just walking down the street, you can be minding your own business these days, walking down the street, and you're going to end up in the background of someone else's picture, whether you like it or not, because people are just taking pictures all the time. Everybody has a camera with them. Everybody has a camera with them, and they are taking more pictures than people have ever taken in their life. So you could end up in the background of any number of pictures, and the grid has facial recognition software. You know, it could very easily recognize you and know exactly where you were at a given time and who else was around you, and therefore there's just no escape. So you might as well just move into the apartment complex. You might as well just move in and be like, the girl I have a crush on is here, so I'm going to move in too. And it's just, it's full circle. But really, I think that things are going to change a little bit in the coming years. I don't know exactly how. I don't know exactly how, because I couldn't have predicted this exactly. As much as I like to dance my fingers across my crystal ball, and, you know, I do manage to predict some of the directions things are heading, I find that so much catches me by surprise. Bigger things than just weird, like, Dead Roseanne show, you know? There are bigger things than that that catch me by surprise. And I didn't expect this exactly. I didn't expect everything to take off in the exact way it's taken off. But I like that quote by, I can't pronounce his name, like Zbigniew blah blah Owski, whatever. He was a head of state, something like that. I really don't know. I've only read his name. It's never been pronounced to me, or if it has been pronounced to me, I forgot, and I just latched on to my first non-pronunciation anyway. But he had a quote where he said, you know, history is more a product of chaos than conspiracy, and I think it's important to keep that in mind. Because you look at people who are doing that whole thing where they're rebelling against the state of the world, the way the digital world has invaded the real world, and the quote-unquote real world is, you know, fueling the digital world in this endless back and forth. People, you know, they get angry at that. You know, the modern-day Ted Kaczynskis who are fighting the world by using a flip phone, they get mad at that, and they act almost like this was all by design. It's almost like they think there was some conspiracy to get us all addicted to our phones, when really it was just so much of this is just circumstance. You think about something like Facebook taking off, you know, just a college project. And of course, people who are really far out there are going to say that it was funded by the government, you know, and all that. But just to be totally real, it's like that was just random. It's random that that one particular thing managed to take all these other things that people like to use the internet for and put it in one place, and they made it exclusive. You know, over time, it was like first college students, then it was all students, then it was anybody could get an account. And so they kind of made it exclusive, and that's always a great way to get attention, to get interest from people. You know, phones gradually developed. First, they had just really simple, primitive cameras. Even flip phones had cameras and took grainy pictures. And it all just kind of developed. Technology developed. And, you know, people tried to do what they could with it. And you don't have to like what's going on, but I don't think you should view it as some master conspiracy. I think that's giving someone, some shadowy figure, too much credit. It's been far more a product of chaos. And it's true for how people see a lot of history. You see it a lot with social issues when you think about just the immense struggle of humanity going back to the most primitive times, and how all technological innovation was originally just a way to make the struggle easier. The wheel, fire, all of these things were developed just to make the struggle a little bit easier. And then came entertainment. Or maybe entertainment was always there, but isn't entertainment just a way to make the struggle easier too? It's all of this stuff is a way to find order within chaos. And a lot of times it creates more chaos. You know, a lot of times it does, but I think we manage to find strands of order somehow in all of it. It's a constant back and forth. Everything is just moving. It's a fucking seesaw. And that was a form of technology, too. Think about the day that somebody created the seesaw. That was a big day for somebody. I bet the apartment complex has a seesaw, too. No apartment complex playground is complete without a seesaw. But we'll see what happens with the apartment complex. We're in it. You know, we're not leaving it. Even if you're in that little house off the grid, but still in a little tiny square surrounded by other grids, you know, we're not leaving it yet.
This land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave, this golden land to me. And when the morning sun reveals her hills and plains, I see a land where children can run free.